It's Tuesday, 16th of September. This is your BizNews Briefing. I'm Alec Hogg. Well, there's some big property news coming out this morning. Financial results for the year to end June from both HighProp and Attack. We'll give you some information on that. Then we'll be having a look at a warning for South Africa's corrupt politicians. I'm not saying all politicians, but certainly the corrupt ones. There has been an outbreak of revolutions in Asia driven by the young, super young, the Gen Zs. They're not going to take it anymore. They are tired about having no future, and they have ousted the governments in Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, and most recently, Nepal. The BizNews Investment Conference is just behind us. We'll have a couple of clips from that event for you. One from Davi Root, another from Ashor Sarapan, the Deputy Finance Minister, picking up on something that we did share with you yesterday. This one, though, is all about municipalities. And then the bulwark of the BizNews portfolio at the moment, the stock that we doubled up on in the Shift portfolio, Alphabet, parent of Google, has gone through $3 trillion. So lots to share with you today. But let's kick off with that first local story on the South African property market. And in particular, let's focus on HighProp. Now, you would know HighProp as a owner of the Rosebank Mall, Hyde Park Corner in, that's in Johannesburg, Canal Walk in Cape Town, and a number of other massive shopping centres around the country. It did well in the 12 months to the end of June, but still faces lots of headwinds. I asked the chief executive, Mornay Wilkin, earlier this morning, how one operates in an area when you have shockingly bad governance, as is the case in Johannesburg, where quite a lot of HighProp's shopping centres are based.
Governance is the one thing. I think it's more not looking after the infrastructure. I think the output and what it means is it's costing us more. Now you actually have to ensure your mall caters for those things where the lack of infrastructure is in the surrounding areas. So you have to start cleaning up yourself. We all become part of city improvement districts where we get a number of landlords to stand together to look at the roads, to fill the potholes, to actually make sure the security is good, to clean the city or the surrounding area. And it just costs you much more. I mean, over and above that, you also still have a high cost of rates that you have to pay. But it is what it is. You need to adapt or leave. So we're adapting. What we are actively doing is looking to reducing some of our exposure in flooding.
Well, tell us about the Hyde Park shopping center, Hyde Park Corner. That's always been a jewel in your crown and certainly for any property development in Johannesburg. You've now offloaded half of it?
That's correct. I think it's a transaction where we effectively over a two-year period will sell 100% of the mall. I would say strategically, Hyde Park Corner is only a 20,000 square shopping center. It's a little bit smaller than the rest of our portfolio. And I think strategically, we actually thought it's not that key for us at this point in time, and therefore we dispose of it.
It's been very well documented that the governance of, in particular, Johannesburg has been poor. You're a huge property owner. You've got massive investments there. How do you manage through that?
With effort, Alec. I think what is very unique is you need to find a solution how to attend to those things. You must find the problems you need to address and how do you address them. I think it also plays sometimes to the benefit. I mean, when load shedding was happening, which is not happening now, what we made sure is our portfolio is fully packed generator capacity. And that had some benefits. I mean, when load shedding was happening and people wanted to go out, they knew they could come to our malls because they will have power. So I think you must use these opportunities, use it maybe more as opportunities. Like you can create the safety within your mall. So a lot of people can come to your mall. I think also if you take online shopping and those type of things, I think a lot of the customers rather prefer to come and pick up something than someone coming to their houses. So I think we are playing towards those opportunities and use the best of our ability. Water is the same. We ensured we've got 3 to 4 day backup water at all our sites. So if there's water interruptions, we can at least give our customers or the shoppers the water. So that's the benefits you use to your advantage. The same with the solar. We've just did the big plant at Rosebank, and that's a huge benefit to us also in terms of the bottom line, because we actually, there's about R1 million of benefits from that plant in terms of income. So there's a lot of benefits you must use it to your benefit, rather put it that way.
Yeah, indeed. And that full interview you'll be able to see later today on BizNews TV. Well, things are happening all around the world. It's not just South Africa where there are complaints about corrupt politicians. In Asia, it's now reached beyond boiling point. I remember at the World Economic Forum in January this year, listening to Mohamed Yunus, who has been appointed to a very senior position in the Bangladeshi government. In fact, the Nobel Peace Prize winner and the founder of Grameen Bank has been given the responsibility for leading the country in many ways. And this week, he announced that they will be holding elections very soon. But most recently, we've seen a similar situation in Nepal. And what he told us about in Davos was that the change in government of a very corrupt regime in Bangladesh was engineered by the young people who went out on a daily basis. And when they were shot at, first of all, hundreds of them were killed by their regime. They stood next to where their colleagues had fallen. And eventually the parents joined them. And that was the end of the story in Bangladesh. Well, our partners at the Financial Times of London have taken a close look at what's going on in Nepal and the fall of the government there, all to do with high youth unemployment and significant corruption amongst politicians. Sounds a little familiar, a bit too familiar for us South Africans.
There's been a string of Gen Z-led revolutions in Asia over the past few years. Nepal is the latest example. Just last week, massive protests there caused the prime minister to resign. The FT's Andres Chapani is here to talk more about this. So tell us what happened in Nepal last week.
Well, so basically last Monday, thousands of youngsters, including students in school uniforms, took to the streets in Kathmandu to protest initially against a ban on social media platforms. But that was mainly the spark. They basically went out to protest against what they saw as an entrenched and corrupt political elite. And that led to a fierce response from the police. On the first day, on the Monday, 19 protesters got killed, which led to a second day when other groups also joined the protest. And then some of the public buildings, including parliament, got burned down, some of the ministries and the private residences of some politicians, including the former Prime Minister Kipe Sharma Oli, got burned down. That prompted the resignation of Prime Minister Kipe Sharma Oli late on Tuesday. Well, the first domino, if we can call it that, was Sri Lanka in 2022. Well, again, thousands of protesters, mainly youngsters initially, overran the presidential palace. And the then president fled the country. And then 2 years later, in Bangladesh, also students led a huge popular uprising, and the Bangladesh authoritarian ruler Sheikh Hasina then fled to India. There is a pretty much complete disconnect between the political elites. I mean, these leaders, the one in Nepal was 73, the one in Sri Lanka was 76, the one in Bangladesh 77, the one in Indonesia 73. So the youngsters feel there's a big disconnect between what they say is entrenched political elites, which have been in power sort of like playing musical chairs, and this younger generation, which is very energetic, but in many cases, they're either out of work or underemployed. For example, More than 80% of the workforce in Bangladesh, Indonesia, and Nepal is informally employed, which put them in a very precarious position. And at the same time, youth unemployment is very, very high. So that sort of like sense of political elite is taking away from us what should be spread evenly. It's growing a lot of resentment.
Fascinating. If it happens in other parts of the world, well, you got to believe that it spreads all over. And certainly in Asia, Gen Z is letting, these youngsters are letting their voices be heard, and against yet another warning against the corrupt. Well, there was plenty of that at the BizNews conference. Let's pick up now with keynote speaker Davie Root.
So actually what we need to do, if you really want to compare the finances of the state over time, we have to include all those state-owned enterprises and I call them the parasitals, with the local authorities to get an actual picture of what's going on. So for instance, we know that the debt-to-GDP ratio today, I'm talking about national government debt, to GDP ratio is about 77% to GDP. But the actual number is, if you include the local authorities and state-owned enterprises, about 85% to GDP. 85% and rising at a rate of 2 or 3% relative to GDP every year. The national accounts, we are heading for a financial crisis in South Africa, because I've told you the debt levels, where it is. The debt levels, if you include the state-owned enterprises, are running probably around about 6.5 trillion rand in South Africa, which means each one of you owe more than 100,000 rand more than what you think you owe, because that's a per capita debt GDP in South Africa. What the Minister of Finance also done, remember, it's all good and well if you borrow money and to invest in capital. I always tell my students, it's okay if you go to the bank, borrow money to build a new room for a new baby, that's fine. But if you go to the bank, borrow money to go to Mauritius to make the baby, that's not good. So, and that's what we're doing. We are borrowing long-term money. We are borrowing long-term money, and the Minister of Finance is spending that in short-term current expenditure, essentially destroying capital in South Africa. The capital formation in South Africa is approximately about 15% of GDP, or less than that, actually. We need to increase that to about 25%. And actually, the Minister of Finance, by his destruction of capital, is reducing that. The state is the biggest destroyer of capital in South Africa. So we've got low levels of savings, and a large chunk of that is actually destroyed.
Parasitals. And the number that he mentioned there, and is just worth repeating again. National debt in South Africa is 100,000 rand per person. That's from the baby born today. They are born with debt of 100,000 rand. That's their share of the national debt. And to service that, 22 cents in every rand that we spend as a nation goes on interest alone. That 22 cents was shared with us by Ashor Sarapin, who is the deputy finance minister. He was also one of the keynote speakers at the BizNews conference. And one of the areas that he was waving a big flag about was municipalities.
You can't have a thriving national economy if the local government system is dysfunctional. And local government is in a crisis. And that crisis is impeding growth and investment at every turn. Municipalities are responsible for trading services, energy distribution, water supply, sanitation, roads, and waste removal. These are the basic services that enable businesses and citizens to live their lives. And when they fail, it undermines commerce, health, and quality of life. Now, of the 257 municipalities in South Africa, only 34 received clean audits in 2023. They racked up 7.4 billion rand in fruitless and wasteful expenditure that year, money essentially down the drain due to corruption and incompetence. 76% of all municipalities are deemed at risk or distressed financially and institutionally. Municipal water infrastructure is now so neglected that over 40% of municipal water is lost to leaks before it even reaches consumers, and billions of rands of water literally leak into the ground every year. Our trading services that used to generate profits for municipalities are now loss-making. Johannesburg Water revealed that its water losses are at an astounding 46%, and it loses 2.4 billion a year in water losses. So, who is going to invest in the country and build a factory if the municipality can't guarantee water or electricity supply? Or if it takes months to get permits due to mismanagement? And we all know the problems: poor governance, very weak politicians, lack of accountability, cater deployment and patronage networks. All of these things drive political instability in our municipalities that result in institutional instability. Now, in this context, along with the financial model of municipalities, it's clear that we need serious reform.
No doubt, serious reform. Do you hear the messages on the wind? They seem to be pretty clear. We have 15% investment as a percentage of GDP at another contribution at the BizNews conference. France Grenier said that most developing countries are sitting at 30% of GDP. In other words, double South Africa's rate. And actually, just to keep things stable, you need 25%, something that Ashur Sarapan, the Deputy Finance Minister, mentioned in that little clip as well. All of these keynote speeches are on BizNews TV, on YouTube. Rather, they will be, because it's quite a lot of work to be done, but the team are putting them on progressively. You'll get at least one keynote and one Q&A session per day. So go and visit BizNews TV. Well, we'll be back in just a moment after we've got our little chuckle for the day from our commercial partner.
Like a soapy breakup scene, selling your car can be an emotional experience.
Just how dramatic was the car selling experience?
Not dramatic at all. I did my research and We Buy Cars was by far the best price.
Very not dramatic. But I like drama.
I was standing there watching my phone, waiting for the money to get in, and there it was.
Yes. Car, driving.
We Buy Cars. The easiest way to sell your car, by far.
I wouldn't mind a little more drama. Anybody bring me some tears?
Well, on the Stock Exchange news service this morning, apart from the results from Hyprop, which we've discussed in a little bit of detail earlier on, there was also information coming out of ASP Isotopes. It's a bit of a controversial company, this one. It's run by a Cambridge graduate who has served a lot of time on Wall Street. Paul Mann is his name. He's come to South Africa, bought a business that was in business rescue. It makes isotopes in a different way to those that are produced elsewhere in the world. And they're starting to ship their first products at the moment. The share price of this company has done terribly well in the last 18 months. It is listed on the NASDAQ and recently listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange as well. In the last 5 years, shares were up by almost 2.5 times. And recently, the share price has been improving still further on the news that it is buying a company called Renergen. Now, Renergen has a helium deposit in the Free State and has been battling to bring that to account. The ASP Isotopes team believe that they can make this happen now, and the deal was scheduled to be concluded by the 30th of September. Today, companies announced that the final conclusion will now be a little later, and they've pushed out the due date to the 30th of November. Also on the Stock Exchange News Service today, 28th of November. It was the 30th of September. It's now the 28th of November that the deal will be done by. The numbers that came out of ATTAC, one of the premier property companies in South Africa, were very impressive. The company delivered a 25.6% increase in its distribution, and the dividend was up by just over 26%. ATTAC is best known for its biggest investment by far, which is the Waterfall Complex, and that houses the Mall of Africa. It's bought another 20% of the Mall of Africa in this past reporting period. That was for the year to the end of June. What would be a little concerning for shareholders, though, is that the average occupancy rates were down in the year under review from 92.8% to 91.6%. It's high numbers, But when you are dropping one percentage point on a huge portfolio like Attac has got, well, that is a cause for some concern. And also worrying is that the rental reversion rate has been deteriorating. So they've had a good year. They've paid out a lot of money. The gearing is down. In other words, the leveraging, the debt, the interest cover is up. And that's a very good thing. That's up from 2.3 times to 2.95 times. So the balance sheet's looking good. But actually, on the operational side, there is room for a little bit of concern. Just shows there's nothing really that is a surefire winner, although Attac has done pretty well over the past few years. Something else that's done pretty well, and that's in the very recent period, is Alphabet, the controlling company of Google. We doubled up on the stock in our shift portfolio last month, and they duly obliged by giving us a very nice little trot in the share price. That trot has taken Alphabet's total value to over $3 trillion. Our partners at Bloomberg had a look this morning.
A company of this size, this maturity, how do you sort of keep that momentum going?
I mean, I think the whole DOJ case was a big overhang in terms of the valuation multiple. Mm. And since then, the fact that they keep all their assets intact, they can still have a partnership with Apple, I think that is the catalyst that's propping this up. And look, when you look at all their businesses, cloud, YouTube, I mean, cloud business could actually double over the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And I think the Oracle backlog number was a good illustration of what these hyperscalers could do in terms of their cloud growth. Mm-hmm. So to my mind, if the search business is intact and cloud grows and YouTube grows, I mean, $3 trillion is, I think, is very nothing. Normal.
Are you calling the $6 trillion now?
I would be surprised not to put anything if they keep going up from here.
Well, yeah. I was joking in the commercial break, but I don't know if it's a joke that after NVIDIA hit $4 trillion, $3 trillion seems a little bit quaint here. I know they're in rarefied air. They have, you know, good company when it comes to the other companies that have market caps above $3 trillion. But realistically, if all of those things that you mentioned come to fruition, especially when it comes to the cloud business, I mean, is $4 trillion attainable? Is Romain Bostic's $6 trillion attainable?
So the one anecdote that Alphabet has shared that no one else has shared is the tokens per month. And it's a pretty big number. Google does 980 trillion tokens per month. That's grown 10x over the last 12 months. So imagine if you're in the business of Gen AI and your consumption has gone up 10x across your family of apps and products. That just goes to show that Google products are being used for generative AI. Even OpenAI doesn't have that sort of growth, albeit a much smaller base. So to my mind, that's the one metric that everyone should care about because it shows their Gen AI lead.
Indeed they are. And that's very much our view as well. Gemini being the leader on generative artificial intelligence. And that is not surprising because DeepMind, which has been around for well over a decade, was the company that was founded by the Nobel Prize winner, who has now continued to be the chief executive of all the AI operations for the Google family, for Alphabet, Demis Hassabis. Well, another story that we want to share with you today from our partners at Bloomberg has to do with the change in the energy equation. The United States is now getting more aggressive about bringing in next generation, smaller nuclear reactors. Let's have a watch.
The opportunity of nuclear, particularly in our world of AI, how quickly do you think it'll be brought online in the US or indeed the UK? Because your timeline is fast, it seems.
It's aggressive, Caroline, and that's President Trump. You know, he came in all in on nuclear energy, and we will have reactors, these next generation small modular reactors, critical next year. In fact, I'm pretty confident we'll have one of them before July 4th of next year and several more during the year. Now, it's not the back end in electricity production, but it's the whole nuclear system running, demonstrating how it'll work. I think this will expedite final permitting and sales and commercialization of the reactors. It's going to move fast.
It's not, just, not just fission, but fusion as well. Just how optimistic are you there? 8 to 15 years, I saw. Is that realistic? And how self-dependent would that make the US for, what, 5 gigawatt designs that we're currently seeing just coming from Oracle and OpenAI alone?
Super exciting. I worked on fusion energy in college 40 years ago. And we've seen steady progress for the last 40 years, mostly at the national labs, at the Department of Energy. But with AI and commercial fusion companies coming into space now, the pace of innovation is faster than ever before. Yeah, I believe we will know the commercial pathways to fusion during the Trump administration. And as I said, I think we'll see commercial electricity from fusion energy on could be as fast as 8 years. And I'd be very surprised if it's more than 15. It's coming. It's coming and it's exciting.
Secretary Wright, as you travel across Europe and head to the UK, what kind of instruction has the president given you to put these energy deals in the context of national security and defense?
I think the president has talked from his campaign that his goal was prosperity at home and peace abroad. And he understands instinctively that both of those are intimately tied to energy. You need low cost, abundant, affordable energy at home to lower costs for Americans and make businesses thrive. That's the same agenda overseas.
Fusion energy, I was exposed to that at Davos from the team, the leader of the team, who had the breakthrough of, for the very first time, more energy coming out than had gone in. And that is part of a development which promises to give the world virtually free power into the future. And as Chris Wright, he's there, the American version of our electricity minister, was saying in that short clip from Bloomberg, it's just around the corner in broad terms. 10 to 20 years' time, who knows how the equation will be changing. Well, for some people, though, it's going to be a steep, steep learning curve, as you'll see in today's tailpiece.
If you use Apple Pay, honestly, just be so careful. This is a little embarrassing to admit, but if this could help one person, then I'm really willing to share what my experience was. I'm just going to lay it out like this. When you use Apple Pay, that's real money. That's true American dollars from your credit card. If you have your credit card connected, that's where the money is being sourced from. It's not like a special form of Apple Pay, Apple dollars. Why they don't just say this is real money while you're paying, I don't know. Because I thought that I had accumulated a bunch of Apple dollars to use for Apple Pay by, you know, spending so much time on my phone, giving my data very freely and willingly to any place that asks, like whatever they say, are cookies okay? I say yes, 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 because I thought that's how I was getting prizes, getting rewards, getting Apple dollars. So I didn't think that was real money till I checked my credit card bill. I've been spending money like I'm a friggin' millionaire. I got hair mousse. I have straight hair. My hair doesn't even hold mousse. I call Apple to straighten things out. I go, I please speak with Mr. Steve Jobs. They go, he's no longer with us.
Steep learning curve. Well, this has been your Biz News Briefing. I'll be back again tomorrow, same time. Until then, cheerio.